It's crunch time on 95.3 The Score.
Well, hello. And thanks for tuning in. Countdown continues. College football season begins Saturday. The Oregon season begins a week from Saturday. If you're an Oregon State fan, season begins a week from Friday. One matinee in MLB today. Mike Trout, gone. His 42nd home run. That's his new career high. It's August 20th. And coming out of our vacation break yesterday, I actually put him in the light him up because of the many things he's accomplished. Winning a home run title has not been one of them. And now he's 7 up on the American League. And as far as the entirety of Major League Baseball, you know, you got he and Yelich and Bellinger at 41, 42, 42. And, of course, barring a severe drought, they'll all get to 50. I mean, you know, we went through that period in the steroid era where you had guys hit 60 in one season. Bond 73, McGuire 70. But now it seems like it had somewhat calmed down, but it's back on. WMHRs, very many home runs. So we've got the Micah Pittman injury, which is it's tough to gauge the severity of the impact. We've seen a lot of guys come here early and sizzle in the spring game and through practice, and then all of a sudden the season starts, and it's like, all right, where are they? I believe it was Dylan Mitchell who had a big spring game, I guess, 4 years ago, and then not much during the regular season. With the Brendan Schooler injury, you know, both those guys out now, I guess another 4 to 6 weeks for Schooler, now a full 6 to 8 for Pittman. It's just a matter of, You, as a coach, you would love to have the full complement of your players, obviously, and especially when you get to the point in camp, because at Media Day, Mario Cristobal brought up an excellent point, and, well, it's how he operates in particular, and I think it's a common theme within a day or two. You break camp, and you're not thinking, the fans might be thinking about Auburn since July, but they're kind of sharing the reps between the ones, twos, and threes. And then come tomorrow, he said 10 days out, then they're in Auburn prep mode. So they may have had kind of a week ago maybe a mental depth chart, and now it's got to be tweaked a little bit. So we'll talk about that. About a month ago, I was checking my notes. I ran through the Pac-12 and went team by team. And who was in a running to be their quarterback? There's been a lot more clarity, as you'd imagine, as we're so close to the start of the season. So today I had some time. I went through and kind of narrowed it down to who Oregon could expect to face in the North. And obviously, the news came down today that Oregon will be facing a true freshman in Dallas. Gus Malzahn of Auburn has settled on Bo Nix to be his starter. We'll talk about that as well. Got some more MLB to get to. And some follow-up thoughts from the release of yesterday's AP poll, and not so much who is ranked where, but how the national writers, the regional writers, the beat writers how they cast their ballots and how, in my opinion, it kind of dismisses the typical whine you hear from out here about East Coast bias. So should you decide that perhaps you would like to participate and elaborate and contribute to this or any other topics on your mind, 284-8571. It is our Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline for all of your diesel needs, online at OregonFuelInjection.com. I guess Baker Mayfield, you know, I don't mind brash. I don't mind cockiness, confidence. Guy willing to speak his mind. It just, what's weird about him is the level of chirping far exceeds his level of accomplishment as an NFL player. It's like, you know, you always, I think there's a tendency to think trash talking and you kind of default to the NBA. You know, Bird was notorious, as was Michael. But they were Bird and Jordan. Baker Mayfield right now is a Heisman Trophy winner who has NFL fans and his fans stoked for a season. I mean, you know, his comment about Daniel Jones, and, you know, as a Giants fan, I wasn't doing back handsprings when they picked Jones out of Duke at six, but because it's the draft and it's a crapshoot, who the hell knows? But, you know, as far as playoff wins, Mayfield is tied with Jones, me, you, and Nick. So it's just, like I said, I buy more into the yak, 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 don't come back, all you want, based on accomplishment, not just being enamored with the vision in the mirror, if that makes sense. The Oregon women have released their non-conference schedule. And obviously in this league with Stanford and UCLA, Oregon State's going to be outstanding again. It's going to be a battle, as good as the Ducks are. And as much as this program has just absolutely ignited and... But three games in particular jumped out at me. They play at Syracuse. Now, remember, the Cuse is a very good ACC program who qualified for the tournament last year, won a game, got run by South Dakota State. You know, that was that they were in Oregon's bracket. And now the Ducks are going to go to the Orange and play them early in the season. It was the second game last season. They will also play and host. Remember how stoked everybody was for Mississippi State? You know, powerhouse team, played for a national title. Louisville is coming here. The Cardinals made it all the way to the Elite Eight last year, losing in the regional final to UConn. And the first week of February, in the midst of Pac-12 play, Oregon is going to Stores to play UConn. You know, it said at UConn, I would assume that. I should be careful that it's not a neutral site game. But you've got a Final Four team and the standard setter for the women's game in the Huskies on the schedule, an Elite Eight team who's been a terrific program for several years now in Louisville, and a powerhouse ACC program, and that's just the non-conference games. So that's pretty exciting. Thoughts on that? 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. I was listening to an interview on the SEC Network with, I think his name is Cole Kubelik, and he was talking about Clemson, not that he felt they were not justified in being ranked number one in the writers' poll, but he said in his belief that a lot of people are just like, wow, They kicked the crap out of Alabama last year. They bring back a bunch, you know, their receiving core and obviously Lawrence at quarterback. But, man, we were talking prior to my vacation, and I think a little bit yesterday, about Oregon's offensive line and ranked one or two or three or one or two by all of the primary rankers on the national level, including our buddy Phil Steele. And the consensus is Auburn's defensive line is as good as any in the country.
Number one.
Clemson lost three first-round draft picks on their defensive line and a fourth-rounder. Two-time All-Americans, one three-time All-ACC performer, and one two-time All-ACC performer. It's like, if they don't miss a beat and have a really good defense, that's a program that's not going anywhere. That's, like, scary. Has anyone, and remember, you could also text us 321-0824. Probably would be helpful if I had the text line up on my laptop. It's just a better way to respond rather than kind of osmosis or kind of trying to read people's minds.
Just yelling out into the ether, hoping that someone will yell loud enough and their text will come through.
First of all, don't yell at us. We've got pretty good headsets here. We really can't hear much. But CNN has this series running. It's called The Movies. Tom Hanks is one of the executive producers. And, oh my God, it is so good. First of all, it's about, first one, episode one, the 80s. It's 2 hours. And the rest of them, I think, are 90 minutes. But it's not a case of, well, here, we're going to rank the movies of the 80s. No, there's some of the stars there, some outtakes and some really good footage and interviews. And I mean, the 80s started with The Shining, Raging Bull, Empire Strikes Back, Ordinary People. I mean, that's 1 year. And they said, the question was, who's your favorite director? And they were like, okay, here's the deal. Pick your three favorite directors, and you could only, they're all have a new movie out on the same day, and you could only see one. Which would you go see? You know, they have, Lawrence Kasdan is a legendary filmmaker, and he and George Lucas are in the office like the second day after they decided to make The Empire Strikes Back, and Lucas tells him, Darth Vader is Luke's father. And he's like, oh, hell yeah. You know, most people would be like, I don't want to know that now, la, 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 la. But that was like either day one or day two. It's like, okay, we're going to make this movie, and here's what's going to be the big catchphrase. If you ever watched The Simpsons back then, that was, Homer ruined it for everybody when he went and saw it in the theater. I can't believe that. Just total idiot. But, then
that's gotta be the most blatant movie spoiler ever, right?
Ever.
Because
ever.
Everybody, like, if you know somebody named Luke, you've done the, Luke, I am your father. Like, my parents, have friends who, like, her friends, like the husband, was like, if we have a son, he has to be named Luke because I just want to be able to make that joke all of the time. And it's just like, you know, you're just spoiling a movie that, like, if you've never seen Star Wars. Right. If you've never seen it and you're, you know, watching this movie or whatever and this Luke guy's in it, you're like, I wonder if that's the Luke who the same guy as his father, but I don't know what his father looks like. Like, I imagine, like, for the people that were, like, watching that for the first time, like, that moment must have been crazy.
It was. And I've said this before. I had never seen the first one that came out in 77. I had never seen Empire, which came out in 80. And by 83, they were both available on VHS. Ooh. And so my buddies that I was working with are like, okay, this is ridiculous. And I went to their house on a Thursday to watch Star Wars, on a Friday to watch Empire, and we went to the Cinema 46 in Totowa to watch on the big screen the third one. I can't even think of it right now. Return of the Jedi.
There you go.
And everybody was very, very cooperative. So as I'm sitting in their den watching Empire, and it's like, what? I managed to not find that out for 3 years.
That's pretty impressive. But it's also like, I don't know.
It was a different time.
Oh, yeah. It probably very easy to avoid spoilers back before social media was a thing. But like that was the thing with Game of Thrones with the Red Wedding. Like you've shared that story before, too. Like people were setting up like reaction cams for book readers that were watching the show and they knew what was going to happen, and people who were strictly Game of Thrones watchers to see how they would react when this moment happened, because characters in shows aren't, like, big characters aren't supposed to die off and be killed like that, but George R. R. Martin don't give a damn. George Lucas don't give a damn.
My wife was addicted to Game of Thrones. I never watched it. So it was on Sunday nights, I think, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's the Sunday of Red Wedding, and she's watching it live. Because I'm out. I was doing something that night. I was playing poker or something. And whenever you know what I think it was? We were going to golf, then play poker. So golf finished. I left something home. I walk in the door during that scene.
Nope.
And just the look on my wife's face as, you know, slash. I was like, was that a main character? Yup. Is that a main character? Yup. I'm like, I'm going to shut up and leave now. And she's just like, this can't be happening.
Like one of the bigger moments like in TV history, even though it happened in a book that had come out like 20 years before.
Right.
I don't even know what my reaction was when I like actually saw the Luke, I am your father. I was probably young enough to the point where like it didn't actually like register with me because I had just been hearing Luke, I am your father from like everybody. And I was also probably too young to really connect the dots about what was going on in the Star Wars universe. But now I'm kind of mad I never had that like awakening moment.
You know, somebody just texted and they did bring up a good point, and I've heard this before. The line, Luke, I am your father, is not the line. That's not it verbatim. It was like that one thing from The Sting when I used to say, you know, come on with me, Kelly, you follow? It wasn't exactly that, but it was kind of along the lines of that. But I wonder, I would like to have, like, if there's a site you can go to, like, the most recent argument for somebody seeing Jedi the first time that still didn't know Luke was Darth Vader's son, and like, was there a fist fight? Were they 8 years old? And it's just like, I don't want to be friends with Jeffrey anymore. He's a jerk.
He's ruining movies for me. I don't get it.
And of course, the parents would be, wait a minute, he ruined Empire for you? I'm going to go kick his father's ass. Okay. That's just bad parenting.
I guess the line is, no, I am your father. So you just switch out no for Luke. It adds a little bit of context, which really makes the spoiler even worse, because you're actually saying, Luke, I am your father, in your Darth Vader voice, which, you're ruining everything at that point.
Oh, man. So, I just got a text from somebody who's dating themselves. There was a scene like that in MASH, the original MASH. So the Lieutenant Colonel Henry Blake was the original guy who ran the MASH 4077th. So he's leaving. McLean Stevenson was going to leave to have a very successful TV and film career. He did one series, was forgotten about, and then like died in his 60s. It was a horrible, horrible decision. So he's checking out. And there's a great scene at the end where he's got this new suit. He's saluting everybody. He gives Hot Lips Houlihan a big kiss. And his chopper takes off. He's heading back to the States, back to his wife in Illinois. And so the last scene, they come out of commercial. And obviously, the tradition is in any ER scene, you come in, you got to put a mask on. And so Radar walks in with kind of this dazzled look on his face. Radar, put a mask on. And he's like, starts to almost tear up off this telegram. The plane carrying Lieutenant Colonel Henry Blake shot down over the Sea of Japan, it spun in. There were no survivors. Silent cut to Houlihan and Hawkeye. End of that episode. Oh, no. At the time, that was like, whoa. That was water cooler talk the next day. Like, are you freaking kidding me? How dare they? But then again, it was a series about war.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, that's a lot of things that happened, like, maybe we don't know a whole lot about, but like actors all the time, they'll just be like, I don't want to be a part of this anymore. I'm ready to do bigger and better things. Can you please kill me off? Like Joey from Friends, like he just wouldn't get into the elevator.
Right, Drake Ramore.
he didn't want to get killed off. He's like, no, I don't want to go in the elevator.
Finally, he's like, oh, all right.
It's like a bunch of actors are like, okay, I'm ready to do bigger things, and I want to just, you know, leave this behind. Just kill me off. Go ahead. But to do it, I mean, that's dramatic. Oh,
it,
man.
Because it was just a brilliant send-off, and you're not who thinks like that? Especially back then, you know, you're kind of invested in the series. And by the way, here come the texts. Yeah, I cried at that episode. That was unbelievable. Sure. All right, before we take our first break, I also want to remind you, bottom of the 4 o'clock hour, first hour of sports talk, always look forward to chatting up Cat Mertz, the Oregon soccer coach. Their season starts Thursday. So we'll talk with her about how things are going. They just had an exhibition victory against British Columbia and some new faces. And, she's long been heavily involved as an assistant with the U.S. women's national team, be it under 18, under 20, under 23. So always a lot to talk with Coach Mertz about. All right, that's coming up at 4:30. Your friends here at KUJZ 95.3 The Score, we've got a magnificent way for you to save big money. Don't pay full price, pay half. Go to our website, 953thescore.com, click on the Sweet Deals link, save half price on local area businesses. Oh, it's restaurant week. And as of 9 o'clock Monday, there was teriyaki madness. Today, Tracktown Pizza. It's the pizza guy, sir. And the way it works, $25 will get you a $50 gift certificate. You can get the deets, our Sweet Deal link at 953thescore.com. So check out Sweet Deals today from 953 The Score. Yeah, that was a big win for the Cardinals last night, and we previewed the young kid Dakota Hudson through 6 2/3 innings of no-hit ball. 3 Redbird pitchers combined on a one-hit shutout versus Milwaukee. The Cardinals are the new blue leader in the National League Central, up a mere half game on the Cubbies. The Brewers fall 3 games back as we welcome you to Crunch Time, 95.3 The Score. Somebody sent me a link. Whew. Some people go deep, man. PFF.com. Dude's name's Cam Meller. He actually decided who was going to be the starter for some schools. He ranked them in order from 1 to 130.
Should we start at 130 and just work our way up? Here we go.
Well, what kills me is, look, if you do top 12, top 15, I get that. You know the team. But it's like, how much time did he spend deciding that, you know, that Logan Bonner of Arkansas State, he's not 124. He's definitely not 127. You know, he's the 126th best starting quarterback in college. I mean, how much time?
I think it's a little low. I think he should be about 122. I think there's a couple other guys he's a little overrated on that list, especially in that portion. I mean, you can really tell that he just kind of mailed it in once he got into the mid-120s. He was just like, look, I'm almost there.
Right,
Let's just get it over with. Also, who is the worst-ranked quarterback in college football? Because I would hate to be that kid right now.
Right now, it's – well, first of all, as a rule, at the FBS level, and on a program I make fun of a lot on this program, and it's not a Pac-12 school, but Rutgers. It does have a connection to maybe me.
Rutgers.
Yes. Arthur Sitkowski. Lowest grade we've ever given to a full-time starter at any level. Oh, my God. He says the Rutgers passing offense was a disaster by all accounts last year.
They're in the Big 12 for Big 10 for no reason. For no reason at all other than to just be able to play the Big Ten basketball tournament in New York once every 3 or 4
years.
Right, right. That is it. To literally get walked over every single year, every single time they play.
Sacrificial Scarlet Knights. Oh. I love this one, though.
Lowest grade ever.
At 129, you have the legendary Cephas Johnson. South Alabama. The logic here is tremendous. On a small sample size, Johnson's grade was in the same category as Sitkowski. By the way, his quarterback rating, 28.7. It's like if a quarterback hands off, loses 5 yards on a behind-the-line pass, and quick kicks, it's like higher than 28.7. I like this. In all likelihood, we've seen him at his worst, and he'll improve in year two. How weird is this, though? How about
Nathan Peterman, when he had the 7 interceptions in 2 games in 2018, his QB rating was 6.5.
And first, the fact that that's a plus number is unbelievable. And how about once upon a time, Louisville had really good quarterback play not that long ago. They're third to last with guy's last name is kind of ironic. Jaywan Pass. That's what most quarterbacks coaches are saying. Do you want Jaywan Pass?
See, that's the situation where, like, that family grew up and they've just, like, for generations upon generations, dads have been raising their sons with the last name Pass to just be a
one
good
time,
quarterback.
Baby.
He's just like, it's going to hit at least once. We got to keep the just, it's Pass. He's a quarterback who passes the ball. I don't see how it's not going to work. And it, oh boy, third worst. I mean, so, you know, room for improvement, obviously. You got some competition from the guys behind you to work your way up. Quarterback whose name Pass, I think that's an ideal name for a quarterback there.
Then you get the guys you'd expect. The Kansas quarterback is at 110. Illinois, who's just been garbage in recent years, their quarterback is 107. UNLV, Kent State. I'm trying to see who's the Arizona State 97.
Oof.
Jaden Daniels. I only looked over the North for the segment we'll do later on. You know, it's kind of ironic here. Guess who they have at 96? Joey Gatewood, Auburn.
Ah,
they got the wrong guy. The former number one athlete from Florida. He's been committed since 2015 and just threw one pass during the Jarrett Stidham tenure. Top 50 out of high school, lofty expectations to rise on this list in 2019. Or not.
So does that mean that this guy guessed and he's got him in, like, you know, the around 100? Or does it mean that Bo Nix is so bad that there was no way he could have ever won the starting job and he just completely left him off the 130 in general?
Well, I'm thinking what you said earlier. This guy might have started half-assing at about 90. Because this article was posted a week ago. And there was information available, believe me.
I mean, like, the top 3 or 4 is probably pretty easy. Like, you just power through that. Then you start to get through, you know, 5 through 15 to 20 range. You're starting okay. Still top 25 programs in the country. A lot of names people will recognize. That'll spark some debate. Man, but you're right. Once you get, like, outside of 25, like, the top 25 list is very ideal because it's just about the right number of teams that my brain can comprehend of, this is a good list, but 130. Like, you've really got to, then, like, you really have to put somebody as the worst starting quarterback
worst
in college football at the Division I level. Like, that's a decision that you have to make based on whatever data you have. In some way, somehow, a guy with one pass attempt at Auburn is 98 spot or 96 spots higher than the worst quarterback in the country.
The Duck quarterback who transferred is Terry Wilson, right?
To Kentucky?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. He is in at number 46, just ahead of Jake Luton of Oregon State. I'm just trying, Philippe Franks of Florida, 43. Shane Buechel is now at SMU because he lost his job to Sam Ellinger at Texas. So, you know, it's amazing how because of the rash of transfers now, I'm starting to recognize some names from other schools. Now, Chris Peterson has not pulled the trigger and named Jacob Eason. We'll get into that, but they have him presumptuously at 36. Penn State, we don't care about. Kelly Bryant at Missouri, who's the guy who transferred from Clemson because of Trevor Lawrence. Colorado, Steven Montez, who had his first notable game here in 2016 when the quarterback got hurt at Michigan. Montez came in and they barely survived. Then he came in and kind of tore up the Ducks. Ty Huntley off the injury for Utah is in at 27.
Do you think if he had to, if this guy had to go through and within quarterback battles, like put an asterisk next to a guy's name and like push the list out to 140, how if that kid at Rutgers would still end up at the 140 spot?
So if he started to dip into the upper crust of FCS,
I'm thinking like if you took like the handful of programs that still haven't named a starter at this point, and you just put an asterisk of just like this guy's the backup, but if he were the starter, he'd be in this position. Just like how many more names you would add to this list, and how much farther down that kid from Rutgers would be.
Jalen Hurts 11, Khalil Tate of Arizona 10. KJ Costello of Stanford at 7, or Justin Herbert of Oregon at 3, and then Tua and Trevor Lawrence are 1 and 2. As by the way, there's a shocker.
Too low.
All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Dave. Dave, good afternoon. How's it going?
Good. How are you guys doing?
All right. What's up?
So we were having a lot of discussions about like the upcoming quarterback draft class, and Herbert obviously being one of the big names on that list. And a lot of the argument was that Herbert might have been better off coming out last year as far as his draft position would go, because we were looking at the NFL teams that are most likely to finish in the bottom area, meaning they would draft high. And those teams don't seem like ones that are going to be in the wanting of a quarterback, like the Giants or maybe the Cardinals or the 49ers. So where does a guy like Herbert end up? Does he even end up going top 10 next year, do you think?
Oh, I'd be shocked if he wasn't top 10. Remember one thing. First of all, Lawrence is a sophomore, so he's not in the picture. So it's Tungo Vailoa would be probably one in the mix with him. And you also have to wonder, you know, what happens with Cincinnati. I'm just trying to think who. Oakland might not be very good and be in the market for a quarterback if Carr doesn't pan out. Who knows? You also, a lot of times, it might be wise to check contract status. You know, maybe Washington might not be that good this year. But
but they got Haskins, right? Are they going to pull the plug on him that quickly?
No, I don't think so. But like I'm saying, what if he's a disaster? Which I don't put much stock in the preseason. But what I've seen, he kind of looked lost. Is Buffalo, yeah, if they stink, are they going to be like, well, I guess Josh Allen isn't panning out? Will it be time for, you know, Pittsburgh to pick the successor to a guy like Roethlisberger? So, no, right. it's a legit question, and the landscape should always be considered. But bottom line is, for a guy like Justin, if he was going to go 5, 7, 3, or 8, he's going to get a bunch of money, and he's going to get an opportunity, and if he could play, he's going to have a long, lucrative career.
Yeah, definitely. We came to the conclusion, like you were saying, like with Cincinnati, Buffalo, but there's always that sense that Belichick might make a move to grab him. And he's just that. Can you imagine if Herbert ends up in New England?
That, well, as a New York fan, of course, I'd be a little nauseous, but I'd be happy. But I'd be really happy for Justin.
Yeah, exactly. Man, I have a bad, I would hate it. Thanks for the time, Steve. You guys have a good day.
All right, good one, Dave. The thought of Herbert with the Patriots actually ignited Nick's gag reflex.
Please, like anywhere, but I also like Cincinnati, probably not ideal, but at least he'd make. I think AJ Green's still under contract for a good amount of time, so he'd at least have a wide receiver. Joe Mixon.
By the way, let's not forget Tampa. If infamous Jameis implodes, he's gone. He's out of there. I hate to say it, but if Marcus has a bad year, he's done too. And will they be like, well, we're not rolling the dice on another Oregon quarterback? It's not, you remember, we view things through, well, a lot of you view things through a different lens. It'd probably be best to have a contract status. I mean, obviously, Dallas is not going to be in the market. I'll tell you what. Don't jump me just yet. If he gets hurt again and they finish 5-11, what does Philly say? We can't lean on Wentz anymore. It's been
just
3 years.
They
and
just gave him so much money,
I know.
Though.
Was it prior to last year or this year?
I think it was last year.
Yeah, because remember, after 2 years, the hit is always a lot less.
It's just, I don't think that. I mean, I know the cap hit.
By the way,
I
forgot about Haskins. So
yeah,
both you and Dave got me on that one.
Well, Arizona also went and they took Josh Rosen very high, and they're just like, we can trade him away. Bleep it. Who cares? We'll take another quarterback because just why not? And I could very much see Washington doing that as well.
All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. It is a Tuesday. It is crunch time. We're coming up on our final segment, which all adds up to...
What are you doing?
Coming at you next, 95.3 The Score.
Well, the general consensus in the clubhouse before the game was that this needed to happen. Now, the Astros have played a game already in a park in Chicago against the White Sox. That park also has the netting all the way down the foul pole. And I asked Yuli Gurriel, hey, does that affect you when you were, you know, trying to chase down a foul ball, running from your first base position? And he said, I don't care. It doesn't matter because we don't want to live what we experienced here in Houston in May when that little 2-year-old girl was hit.
That's Stefano Fusaro. Of ESPN, the expanded netting debuted in Houston last night. And I'll tell you what, that's a great answer by Gurriel, the first baseman. Did it bother you? He's like, I don't care. We don't want to go through that again, where we had to live with the thought that one of us might have killed a 2-year-old. There's no trump card there. There's no well but. Ugh. Frustrating. Want to bend people over your knee. All right, we welcome you back. Breathe, Steve, breathe. It's almost football season. It'll get better. We'll lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. It's that time on a Tuesday when the acronyms hit full cycle, emojis come to life, and we just wonder and question. It's called What Are You Doing? Let's let Nick start things off.
To the engravers of the Masterson Trophy, the NHL, and thus Gary Bettman, I ask.
What are you doing?
The Bill Masterson Trophy is awarded to the NHL player that best exemplifies the qualities of perseverance, sportsmanship, and dedication to the game of hockey. It's given generally to players that come back from career-threatening injuries, battling from off-ice issues or personal demons, and other general major life hurdles. This year's winner was Robin Leonard. He had announced his battle with alcoholism, bipolar disorder, PTSD, in the offseason, worked really hard on getting sober, and it was an announcement that you don't just see in the sports world very often. It's happening more in the NBA with players and talking about anxiety attacks and how it impacts them on and off the court, but not in the NHL, where players are supposed to be gladiators on and off the ice, battling to the death for the team, never giving up, and all that jazz. So Leonard had a career year last season with a 2.13 goals against average, a .930 save percentage, and with his teammate with the New York Islanders, Thomas Greiss, they teamed up to win the Jennings Trophy, which goes to the goalies that have the lowest goals against average in the NHL. Anyways, somehow the people at the NHL trophy engraving department messed this up. They messed up, ruined a great story. A couple of weeks ago, Leonard posted on Twitter that the Masterson trophy he had won was given to Robin Leonard, so his name was spelled correctly, of the New York Rangers. Misspelling names is kind of a fun gaffe in the NHL. Dozens of examples of players getting their names misspelled on the Stanley Cup, but they've never gotten the team wrong. This is the NHL. They only gave out about 12 awards every year, so you'd think they'd be able to remember who plays on what team. No Ranger even won an award to worry about, so how could they have messed it up? This really all comes back to Gary Bettman, and he just needs to be fired from a cannon into the sun, as I ask.
What are you doing?
Into the sun.
Yes, please.
Cowboy, I guess running back, Zeke Elliott and agent Rocky Arsenault, I ask.
What are you doing?
Poor little Zeke has not played out his rookie deal. He's got a contract. He's training in Mexico while his team is prepping for a really important season in Oxnard. And after the last exhibition game, team owner Jerry Jones, who I think is a knucklehead, but in this case not, was asked about the absence of his stud back. And by now, you know, he replied, Zeke who? And in our world of two-second attention spans, we stopped there, despite the fact Jera made it clear backup and rookie Tony Pollard was not his equal. And, of course, the agent took it a little too seriously. We were disrespected. And another case of a supposed tough guy athlete with the thin skin of a broken-hearted high school sophomore. And don't forget, despite being under contract, Dallas has reportedly offered a serious big-dollar deal. But no, whining instead, as we ask.
What are you doing?
To the Inter Miami ownership group, I ask.
What are you doing?
An MLS, An MLS to Miami group was formed in 2013 when superstar David Beckham leading the way. They were officially awarded a franchise in January of 2018, and just recently this summer broke ground on a stadium site with the team and all of their one player signs already, getting ready to start their inaugural season in 2020. Politics of building a new stadium can be exhausting. It was especially exhausting in Miami with the lack of land available and stadiums that were already built that couldn't have been used for multiple sports. And now a whole new issue has derailed this process. Inter Miami picked out their ideal location. It was a golf course. And just this week, things were getting grinding to a halt because the dirt is filled with arsenic. According to the Miami Herald, there are two times the allotted amount of arsenic, barium, and lead in the soil. What in the hell was going on at this golf course? Was some evil villain in Miami using it at night to store his toxins, waiting for some masked vigilante to find him before unleashing his entirety plan of putting the toxins into the water system only to get foiled at the very end? How does this system get approved in the first place? Did anyone actually test the soil that they were going to build? And how? It's two times the amount. How does that slip through? Are Miami going to have to play at their temporary stadium site for some extended period of time as the group keeps looking for more actual safe places to build a stadium? None of it makes any sense, as I ask.
What are you doing?
To Brett Gardner and the Yankees, I ask.
What are you doing?
Have they spiked the water in the home locker room in the Bronx or the visitors' dugout when the Bombers hit the road? Has Gardner suffered some kind of brain trauma? Is he angry? Is he getting old? I don't know if I've ever witnessed anything like this. And the oddest part is, it's while they're winning. They got the best record in the AL. They kill the ball. They score runs in bushels. And you behave like this? Gardner's been tossed multiple times from the dugout for things he said and this beautiful new habit of banging his bat on the dugout roof. Bam, 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 bam. One article from EliteSportsNewYork.com says the Yankees have a target on their back. Yes, yeah, since like 1923. It's kind of a duh, and the people are upset that they're having fun. You know, let's get one thing straight. This is ridiculous. This is childish. End of story, as we ask.
What are you doing?
To Energy Star, I ask.
What are you doing?
It's the middle of the summer, and that means air conditioners are getting pushed to the limit. Might not be a problem so much here in Eugene, knock on wood, but with it getting incredibly hot all day and most of the night long, there are plenty of other cities around the country in the summer who deal with heat waves that last for just weeks at a time. The reason we, as mankind, created air conditioning was specifically because we realized we no longer have to deal with those hot conditions. Turns out Energy Star released some recommendations to keep your house cool. Those suggestions? Keep your house at 78 degrees when you're at home, 86 when you're away, and 82 at night. Who lives like that? 78 isn't cold no matter where you live. 78 degrees inside of a house where the air isn't getting moved around or changing is hot. And 82 degrees when you're sleeping is just insane. Tonight in Dallas, for example, it's going to be 88 degrees at midnight. And if you're actually following these asinine suggestions, well, you might as well sleep outside. If you're trying to make weight for a fight, sure, this is the lifestyle for you. You can just work out in your sleep. But for the rest of America, this is too much. I get it that it's energy efficient. It'll keep my energy bill lower, but I will not sleep in a home that is 82 degrees when I have the ability to specifically not sleep in a home that is 82 degrees, as I ask.
What are you doing?
That's hot.
That's too hot.
It's ridiculous.
It's the dumbest thing ever.
To veteran Cleveland Brown quarterback Baker Mayfield, I ask.
What are you doing?
Look, I really like the guy's moxie, his passion, the way he plays the game, but he speaks beyond his level of accomplishment. You know, when Jordan or Bird trash talk, they were, you know, Jordan and Bird. His performance last season as a rookie to be admired, but here's the teams he beat. The Bengals twice, the Jets, Falcons, and Broncos. They had one nice win against Baltimore. 12-9. He engineered a touchdown and was sacked five times. The latest was not so much knocking the Giants for drafting Daniel Jones of Duke so high, but saying, well, he's not a winning quarterback in college. You mean like John Elway? And as for Jones, they were 8-5. They're Duke. They won a bowl game. The season before, they had a winning record. They won a bowl game. So not really accurate, but seriously, dude. Pat Mahomes, is he doing okay in the NFL? 13-16 as a starter at Texas Tech. You got to accomplish more before you chirp at this level, as we ask.
What are you doing?
All right, that brings us to break time. We'll do that. Looking ahead to Sports Talk in the 4 o'clock hour. At the bottom, we'll talk with Kat Mertz, Oregon softball coach. So y'all just, what did I say, softball?
Yeah.
No, Kat Mertz is still the soccer coach. It had an S and an O in it, so it was well on its way. But she would probably prefer I talk the beautiful game, which we'll do at 4:30. Sports Talk is next. 95.3 The Score.
I'm not going to be here.